Thanks for joining us today for our Thursday broadcast of Abiding in the Word with Dave Love, Senior Pastor of Calvary Castle Rock. Today, we're continuing our study in the book of Exodus. So let's listen in now to Pastor Dave.
Soon your trials will be over.
And so, again, nor shall you go up my steps by the altar that your nakedness may not be exposed on it. So then, in chapter 21, verse 1, as we begin chapter 21, he says, now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. Now the judgments are really for what? Judges. Judges are the one that bring these judgments. Remember, Moses, when he was in the desert on the way to Mount Sinai, all of a sudden Jethro shows up and sees what Moses is doing from morning to evening. He is solving one problem after another with the people. And Jethro sees him come back and said, this is not wise. You're going to get burned out. Moses, you need to delegate. You need to raise people up that can oversee thousands. And then you need to raise other people up that can oversee hundreds, and others up that can oversee 50s, and others up that can oversee tens. So now if some neighbors have a problem or whatever, they can go to their judge that has been raised up to oversee that one family or two families of 10. If it's too difficult for him, then they can go to the one that oversees 50. Too difficult for him, they can go to the one who oversees hundreds. Too difficult for him, they can go to the one that oversees thousands. Too difficult for them, then all of a sudden bring it to Moses at that point. Okay, the really, really difficult things, Moses, you'll do. But all these other things, raise up godly men that can judge and that you could delegate to so you don't get all burned out, okay? And so these judgments that we're going to go over from verse 1, chapter 21, all the way to chapter 24, okay, are going to require judgments. And so these are the guidelines for the judges. These are not judgments that the people can take into their own hands. These are the standards that have been set for the judges. The term judgments refer to the standards set for the judges and how they're going to judge. Now, in verse 6, we have the word judges here. Then his master shall bring him to the judges. Okay? The word judges there is a very interesting word. It's the word Elohim. It's the word Elohim. And I would submit to you the reason why they're called Elohim is because they're to represent God and to judge righteously. Now, I want you to also note verse 22. If men fight and hurt a woman with a child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, she shall be punished. He shall surely be punished accordingly as a woman's husband imposed on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. Different word. Interesting, the first time judges use their verse 6, next time it's used verse 22, and yet they're different words. Here in verse 22 here, that is a word that speaks of, it's the word palil. It means magistrate is what that means. Whereas the other one is Elohim. So the very first time judges is used, it's kind of like Elohim and magistrate. Thus tying those two together that they're human judges, okay, and yet at the same time represent God, and so they're the gods or Elohim in the way of carrying out God's judgment. Now I want you to go to Psalm 82. Now I mentioned this back in February, but I know that was a long time ago. So I want to hit on this again. I want you to go to Psalm 82. Psalm 82 is a very interesting psalm. I'm going to read it to you here. It says, God, Elohim, stands in the congregation of the mighty. He, God, judges among the gods, Elohim. How long will you judge unjustly and show partiality to the wicked? Defend the poor, the fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and needy. Deliver the poor and the needy. Free them from the hand of the wicked. They do not know, nor do they understand. They walk about in darkness. All the foundation of the earth are unstable. I said, the true God. You are gods, Elohim, and all of your children are the Most High, but you shall die like men and fall like one of the princes or rulers. Arise, O God, Elohim, judge the earth, for you shall inherit all nations. Now, it's very interesting when you read this, where it says that here that you are gods, he judges among the gods. And then in verse 6, I said, God himself said, you are gods, Elohim. When we look at this, it's very interesting because the word Elohim, God in the Hebrew, Elohim, means God, it means gods, it means divine ones, it means judges, okay? Those called Elohim in the Bible, spirit beings such as angels, they're called Elohim. Job 2:1 and Job 38, verse 7. Demons, gods, idols are also called Elohim. Genesis 35, 4, Deuteronomy 32, 17, 1 Kings 11, 33. This one's really fascinating. Disembodied spirits are called Elohim. Samuel, when he was being summoned up by the witch of Endor after he died by Samuel. 1 Samuel 28:13. It says there, and the spirit came, meaning Samuel, and the word there is Elohim. Elohim. Judges, human judges. We see this, Exodus 21:6, Exodus 22:8 through 9, as well as verse 28. And yet, God himself, Yahweh, is called Elohim. Now, keep your hand here in Psalm 82 and go over here to Psalm 95. Okay, Psalm 95. Look what it says here. It says in verse 1, O come, let us sing to the Lord, Yahweh, L-O-R-D, all capital, Yahweh. Let us shout joyfully to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before his presence, Yahweh's presence, with thanksgiving. Let us shout joyfully to him with psalms. For the Lord, Yahweh, is the great God, El, and is the great king above all gods, Elohim. Right here, Yahweh is the greatest Elohim. Okay, where maybe all these things that we mentioned are Elohim, there's only one Yahweh Elohim. Now go down here to verse 6. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before Yahweh, our maker, for he is our Elohim. Whether those other entities are Elohim, we don't worship them. Only Yahweh, who is Elohim, is who we worship. All the other Elohim worship Yahweh. We worship Yahweh, who is what? The greatest Elohim, okay? And he is the maker. And so he is the one true God, and he is Yahweh Elohim. And so, again, this term Elohim is most frequently used to refer to the one true God, okay? But there are other references to other Elohim that aren't Yahweh. Yahweh is the creator of everything. The other Elohim are not creators, okay, and they are not to be worshipped. They have been created by Yahweh. So, knowing that, and going back here to Psalm 82, there are two different versions of how you're supposed to possibly view Psalm 82, okay? And when you read about the gods here, he judges among the gods. There is the understanding that these gods are supernatural beings who rule under God. Psalm 82:1 says God presides in the great assembly or stands in the congregation, and he gives judgment among the gods. In Hebrew, the phrase translated congregation speaks of a divine congregation or divine council, they would say. Some interpret this passage as God warning that those in the divine council who continue to make unjust decisions will die like mere mortals and fall like other rulers. Psalm 82 there, as being said there in verse 7, okay? And so with this viewpoint, this Michael Heisner kind of made this popular over the last 20 years or so. He's not the inventor of it. He's not the one who first came upon it. He kind of codified it and brought it to everybody's attention, but other people have been saying this for a while. that's a possibility, that these gods are a divine council of angels that have kind of gone astray, and so they're not looking after over the nations like they're supposed to be doing and things like that. And it's like, okay, I love the conversation of it and everything. I love to talk about it. But there's also another view. The other view says the gods of Psalm 82 are human magistrates. They're judges. The rulers who have been granted authority in the earth, okay? And they're supposed to be judging righteously there in Israel. This is one of God's greatest complaints other than idolatry. Other than idolatry, his biggest complaint against Israel has always been their judges. How they began to judge unrighteously and began to take bribes. We see it all through the Old Testament. You see it in Isaiah 1, verse 21 through 23. You see it in Isaiah 10, when he makes a decree to the unrighteous judges. You see it in Isaiah 59, 1 through 8. You see it in Micah 3, 11. You see it in Malachi. You see it all through God's word, where he comes against the unjust judges and how they've been taking bribes and the poor can't come to them and actually get justice and things like that. One of the greatest outcries that God has against those judges here on earth. And so he tells them, guess what? You're going to be judged too. In verse 6, I said, you are gods and all of you children of the Most High, but you shall die like men, meaning you're going to be judged yourself. And so he's asking them there in verse 2 and 3, how long? How long are you going to judge unjustly? Show partiality to the wicked. Defend the poor, the fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and the needy. Deliver the poor and the needy. Free them from the hand of the wicked. When are you going to start doing that? Because they haven't been doing that. Because their judgments have been brought forth because of bribes. And so they judge for this person or that person, depending on the money that's been given to them. And so they have no, their eyes aren't out for the fatherless, the afflicted, the needy, the poor. Okay? They're looking at it as to make money. And so at the very end, arise, O God, judge the earth, for you shall inherit all the nations. And so this is a cry that's going out just saying, come now. How much injustice do we see in the world? I mean, you know, and you kind of look at what's going on. So last week there was a pride event in Parker. It's a public event. It's a public event. And so as we show up as a public to go in, they wouldn't let us go in. That's absolutely discrimination. And the Parker police force enforced that. That's wrong. There's something wrong in the judicial system when you have a public event, but you can't come. What? That's discrimination. I have a friend who's an attorney that had a ticket, went in, was actually walked in with the person who created the event and everything else. He was in there for about 15 minutes, and all of a sudden she comes back with the police and escorted him out. And he says, you can't do that. I'm a public, you know, I'm just here to be, it's a public event. I have a ticket. You even walked me in here and everything's fine. And now you're walking me out. And they arrested him and gave him a ticket for trespassing. It's unjust judges, you know, and it's kind of like, you have to be tolerant, but we don't. And it's kind of like, is this a public event? Well, yes, but well, then I'm part of the public. No, can't come in. We're saying no to you. So when I was there, they walked me off the parking lot. They wouldn't even let me go any further, you know. And it's kind of like, wow, why are you stopping me and not other people? You know why? Because I had a hat that had a cross on it. I had our church shirt on it saying I love my church. And I had a Bible. So I was very easy to identify, apparently. Okay. Very easy to identify. Oh, others can come, but you can't. Wow, interesting. How does it get to this point? Unjust judges. The city council there of Parker. Unjust for allowing that to happen. And shame on the Parker Police Department for enforcing that. I'll call it out right now. Shame on you for enforcing that. You shouldn't have done that. It was a public event. So Again, we see that all the time, you know, that rules for you, but not for you. Why? Because we're afraid something is going on there, that that's why we're judging this way, and it has nothing to do with justice at all. So we understand that. We get that. So calling a human magistrate a god indicates three things. He has the authority over other human beings. He has the power he wields as a civil authority is to be feared. And he derives his power and authority from God himself, who is the picture as judging the whole earth, as in Psalm 82, verse 8. And so human rulers are to remember that even though they are representing God in this world, they are mortal and must eventually give an account to God for how they use that authority. I personally adhere more to the second than I do the first view of Psalm 82. But I love the discussion of it. I really do. I think it's a kind of a fun discussion to have. So let's see what some of these judgments are that the judges would have to carry out. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and the seventh he shall go out free and pay nothing. Chapter 21 begins a long list of rules of everyday life that God gives to Moses, which ends in chapter 24. These rules of everyday life encompass everything from responsibility over your beasts of burden to the mistreatment of strangers. And we have just finished the Ten Commandments, and this was the moral law that was given to Israel. God shows up, and he gives us those Ten Commandments, and now he's going to show how in everyday life these commandments are supposed to be lived out. And so it's an application of the Ten Commandments. Now, the series of applications is known as the Book of the Covenant. In Exodus 24, verse 7, it says, "Then he took the Book of the Covenant, read in the hearing of all the people, and they said, 'All that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient.'" This Book of the Covenant was given by God, just like the Ten Commandments. However, just so you know, remember that it is God who by his finger inscribed on tablets of stone. But here, Moses is going to write it out. Moses is going to write out, okay? There's some liberal scholars out there who think that Israel borrowed most of their laws from other civilizations. Now, it's definitely true that by the time these are being codified and written down, there were other codes of conduct in society. We have Hammurabi's famous code. How do you say that? Hammurabi? Thank you. Hammurabi. Famous code. That's been around for a long time. You have other laws that have been discovered with other societies. The difference is, with those other societies, their laws, they came up with themselves, but this is one that is being given directly from God. For example, we see that when it comes to laws giving legal protection to the poor and to women, they're not found anywhere else in the ancient world, but you find them here, okay? You find them here of what God is giving to the nation of Israel. And so, again, this is a laws given by God. Now, also remember this, that before this was written down, it wasn't as though that God didn't say anything to anyone. He spoke to Noah. Okay, he spoke to other prophets during that time. He spoke to Abraham. He would have told them all sorts of ways of how you're supposed to live your life before this is written down. And so a lot of these laws that they are going to do and how to interact within society would have come from God-fearing people when these other nations are being built up. So again, just because in some other ancient code, you might have had that you kill somebody who is a murderer. Okay, well, God gave that law from the beginning there in chapter 9 of with Noah after the flood, saying this is a universal world rule now for mankind because everybody came from Noah. So that was passed down. So it doesn't surprise me that I see that in other codes. Okay. Because it first came from God, and they wrote it down first before Moses wrote it down. Okay, that doesn't mean that that one's from God and this one isn't. This one is given directly from God himself. And so, and again, we see in Exodus 24, verse 4, "And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord." So he wrote down this Book of the Covenant. All right, you have the Ten Commandments, and you have the Book of the Covenant. The Book of the Covenant is going to be the next three chapters that we go over here. And so in verse 2 of Exodus 20, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Now, these rules of the covenant at first might seem a little unorganized. They seem to jump around a bit, but they really don't. This book of the covenant here starts out with the rules on slavery, which is the fact, the way the Ten Commandments begin. In Exodus 20, verse 2, again, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, or slavery. So it's appropriate to begin with a topic that Israel would be very familiar with for over 400 years, what it is to be a slave. And guess what, Israel? You are not to put anybody into involuntary slavery and be treated the way you were treated for 400 years. You are not going to do that. And so he begins here with this. You were treated harshly. It was cruel. Guess what? You're not going to do that to anyone else. So the first thing I would think is that you would think because of this, that the first thing God would say is that we're abolishing slavery altogether. You're not going to have any kind of slavery at all. But instead, God does allow for certain kinds of slavery. But the way we think of slavery, because of our history here, and the way that God is speaking of slavery, we are going to find out that the word more means servitude. And there's a big difference. And there's a big difference. He's going to build in safeguards to protect the welfare and dignity for those who have to go into servitude. And so for Israel, that servitude is also going to be voluntary. People would hire themselves out into the service of others. They usually did this because they were poor. Maybe some people would make poor financial decisions that would set their family back. Or maybe someone wasn't diligent in tending their flocks or planting their fields and looking after them. For whatever reason it was, they weren't able to make enough to provide for their family. So what could they do? Maybe they borrowed. They incurred a debt which they could not repay. They would then have to attach themselves voluntarily to another family, become their servant while paying off their debt. Hebrew servant. Four basic ways a Hebrew might become a slave to another Hebrew. In extreme poverty, they might sell their liberty, Leviticus 25:39. Father might sell his children into servitude, Exodus 21, verse 7. We're going to see what that's all about. In the case of bankruptcy, a man might become a servant to his creditors, 2 Kings 4:1. Or a thief had nothing which to pay proper restitution. They couldn't repay after they stole something, Exodus 22, 3 through 4. They were not a slave as we typically think of a slave. They were more of a hired hand or an apprentice. They would go live at their master's home where they would work in exchange for room and board or an honest wage. There's a difference between being a servant to someone and man-stealing into forced slavery. Involuntary slavery was forbidden. One of the major criticisms of the Bible is when someone says, well, slavery is wrong, it's evil, and the Bible condones slavery. Okay, can we dive a little deeper than that? Because that's truly misleading, and it isn't true from the thought of what you have of what the Bible talks about, slavery. Notice in Exodus 21:16, you should have that underlined. You should have it highlighted. You should know exactly where to go when someone says, well, the Bible says man stealing's okay, that you just grab someone and force him to labor and all this stuff. You can go right here where it says, he who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he's found in his hand, so you don't sell him, you just keep him, shall surely be put to death. From the holy love of God, we will meet in the golden city.
Well, that concludes today's edition of Abiding in the Word with Pastor Dave Love. Tune in tomorrow as we continue our study in the book of Exodus. Fall is here, which means it's time for our annual Harvest Festival. On October 31st, Calvary Castle Rock will be hosting a wonderful free event for the whole family. The night will include carnival games, inflatables, high strikers, face painting, funnel cakes, food, and of course, lots of candy. So come on out and join us from 4 to 8 p.m. October 31st. You'll find us right near the actual Castle Rock, on the corner of 5th and Woodlands. For more information about us or this radio ministry, please visit our website at calvarycr.com or download our free mobile app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also call the church office at 303-663-2514. Thank you for tuning in to this radio station today. Until our next time together, we want to encourage you to always be abiding in the Word of God.